Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Windup. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott.
Hear all the energy I've got. I'm on the other side of the COVID. I'm loving life yet again. I tell you what, there's nothing sweeter than seeing the negative comeback thing.
Hey.
Going, oh, I can breathe again now.
Hey, there is something
I can see
sweeter.
Sonic 2 now.
And that's seeing you in the flesh, my friend.
I am very glad to be back. But hilariously, we're going to do an old school wind-up thing because me and you are on very different... Well, are we, though, on different sides
though?
Of this? Because we thought in honour of Elden Ring, Souls stuff, whatever, we'd rank the Soulsborne franchise so far, or whatever the hell people are calling it, Soulsborne Hero, or whatever you want to call it. And we don't have a combined blind ranking. We have your top seven, my top seven, or all seven games ranked. And hilariously, I don't know if I'm going to change this as we go. We do have the same number one. But
right.
We'll see.
Okay.
Because we're going to have some various conversations. We'll go back and forward. Well, carry on.
It's funny that you mentioned this there.
You might change it
as you go. Before we get to like the big reveal, yes. I want to say that my top three in this ranking could genuinely change on a daily basis. Like,
same.
From the rough sketch of what I sent you this last week, like it's already changed. My top three is completely radically different. For me, between all of those three games, the margin for difference or criticism or whatever is so minute.
Yes.
That it's literally just however I wake up on that day.
The thing is as well, all these games are bolstered by lore videos and like various ancillary extraneous media that you have to go and seek out. And it's not like all the content isn't in the games as well. I think there's a big distinction to be drawn over the fact that if you don't understand something like a movie, maybe you go and read the book and it's, oh, well, that detail was in the book. You should have read that. That always breaks movies for me because I'm like, well, I shouldn't have to go and do the extra reading. But in this case, all the material, all the lore, the writings, whatever, are in these games. But I feel like sometimes, you know, we're going to talk about lore and the way that the franchise or the series of games deals with lore. I think that elevates various installments, and that is what I'm going to hang some of my positives on, even though first time through I didn't get that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's knowing that it's in there and we're looking at people cite these various like ways to understand the games that it's kind of fascinating in a good way.
Totally. I think, you know, like these games have such a long tail on them, all of them, and you come to appreciate elements of them that you might not even get the first time through. Like my first run through of Dark Souls, you know, I loved it, but there was so much from both a mechanical and story perspective that I just didn't understand. And it's kind of like living with it, allowing it to breathe and evolve in your mind. And that sounds really strange, but like those games just get better the more you think about them, the more you dive into them. And a lot of that stuff isn't necessarily even while you're playing. It is, you know, diving into lore videos. It is, you know, looking back at your experience, listening to conversations that you have with friends or other people who play them.
Oh man, I mean, we'll get to it. But like, obviously Elden Ring is the newest one. That's the one that a lot of people have struggled the most with in terms of the lore stuff. Vatividia, the king of all lore, has finally put his video out. Clarifying a lot of different things, and I think that elevates the game overall, but we'll get there. At number seven for me and you is Demon's Souls.
Yes.
Now, F Demon's Souls, I really hated it. I didn't come in 2009, I didn't play it back in the day. I remember watching the coverage of it and thinking it looked really awkward. My first Souls game was Dark Souls 1, but Demons, when it got remastered, when it came out with the PlayStation 5, I was like, this looks absolutely gorgeous, but I can tell mechanically, gameplay-wise, design-wise, everything about it, why it didn't take off in the first place, why it is this weird, awkward first step prototype that still, to me, feels like this cobbled together thing that is just barely formed. I hate Demon's Souls.
See, this is the thing, right? We both got this last, but you're going in so hard in it, where
yes.
I'm adamant that all of
what
these games are 8 out of 10 and above. You know what I mean? So even when it comes to Demon's Souls, it's last, but it's only last because there has to be something in last.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Okay.
Again, like you, I've only played the remake, you know, didn't have it on PlayStation 3, and currently don't own a PlayStation 3 to play that original game on. But yeah, I will agree with some of your points there that, you know, coming to this late and having it not be my first, having it be the second of last one, you know, the last new installment, I guess, that I played before, Elden Ring, you know, you can see where they've evolved things into Dark Souls. You can see
every single
the experiments
way.
That they've made. To me, though, especially playing the remaster, it's still solid. It's just because I know that experience through and through that it's last. If that was the first one I played, I think I would love it. Mm. But because I can see how it's put together in a way that I couldn't when you first start the series, that is lower than the rest for me.
I think it was just like none of the bosses really impressed me, and I think the more it just felt like a slog. A lot of the thing is, like, it's really interesting, or it's really fascinating with FromSoft over the years, where they've done the whole thing that Hideo Miyazaki talks about trying to manufacture a real struggle because you should overcome something, and that feels genuinely gratifying to overcome something in real life, and he wants to replicate that in the games, and trying to make that happen for players has resulted in all sorts of cheap BS across these games that it, you know, contributes to a general feeling of FFS in the sake of this game. I just want to get through this thing, but then you finally do and it feels good. I feel like the Demon's Souls swings in the wrong direction for that stuff, where it's just too many cheap level layouts, boss mechanics, whatever. Some stuff that I think is it's obviously exhausted at this point, but it was just a bit too cheap in the first place. And just going through Demon's Souls, obviously the remaster, the visual side of it is gorgeous. And I know the people who got on board with it in 2009, like, it is like a cult classic.
Yeah.
Love a lot of those bosses, like the Flame Lurker and stuff like that. And they are like visually impressive, and like, but for me it just doesn't have that spark. It doesn't have that moment where I went, this is all coming together in a way that would make me recommend it. Like, I would never recommend Demon's Souls other than the visuals. Ooh. And even that's only the remaster.
See, that kills me. I would definitely recommend Demon's Souls. Like, if you have a PlayStation 5 especially, and you want to play something that looks great and is you know, obviously the Souls formula, like, Demon's Souls for me is a great showpiece for that console. I think, like you said, you know, graphically, from a visual presentation standpoint, it is astounding. I love the attention to detail there, and I know that might be sacrilegious to some who didn't like the changes that were made to the original.
Right.
But it's interesting, because I want to talk to someone who played this game after the others and has it as their favorite. Because for me, I just couldn't get to that point because I was maybe spoiled by the other games. Mm-hmm. Had I been there from, you know, day one in 2009 championing this thing, like, I might have loved it more. Maybe I need to spend more time with it. I don't know. It just felt like, having seen what came after, It occupies a low spot just because there of is, that inherently.
Yeah, we talked about this before we were recording, but there's something to be said about, like, the Soulsian tilt, which is to say that whatever your first Souls game is will nigh on always be your favorite, because there's something about experiencing just how unique and crazy and oppressive these games feel and then overcoming it that sticks with you. And, like, no other game, even in the same franchise, can get close. Well, can get close, but can never, like, surpass it. Or can it? Next thing is, let's go with your number six, which is Dark Souls 3.
Yes.
Now, I have Dark Souls 3 at number 3, because I love Dark Souls 3. You should talk about how that's your second, quote-unquote, worst one.
Well, again, you know, it's all relative. It's because something has to come in 6.
Could have been Dark Souls 2.
Like you said, well, here's the thing. Like you said at the start of this video, you know, we've been living on soul stuff. I've literally gone from 130 hours in Elden Ring to playing all of Dark Souls 2, and now I'm going through Dark Souls 3. You know, I'm
You got me buying Dark Souls 2. I was like, I haven't played this since 2014, but I've never played the Scholar of the First Sin stuff. We'll get to Dark Souls 2, but just the absolute sickness that is me and you at the minute.
I know, it's
Dark
crazy.
Souls 2, just ridiculous.
It's nuts, man. But yeah, like, going through Dark Souls 3 straight after Dark Souls 2 and straight after Elden Ring, it's been interesting, because Dark Souls 3 is kind of a game that I took for granted for a long time when that came out in 2016. You know, I was so familiar with that series, you know, having played Dark Souls, having played Bloodborne, getting a hang of that flow, that I kind of, like, took it for granted. I just think it does a lot of things incredibly well, but nothing really spectacular. Like, the combat is faster, much, much faster than Souls 1 and Souls 2. It has a little bit more to it in terms of animations and weapon variety and all of that stuff. It's just, I kind of look at it, and I think the big difference between this and my next pick, which is Dark Souls 2, is in the world design, because they try to go back to the kind of more Dark Souls 1 approach to the world being like this one big interlocking thing, but it's still got the linearity of a Demon's Souls or a Dark Souls 2, where you're pushing through it and you're not circling around in the same way that you did Dark Souls 1. So for me, it's kind of like, it's not as much of a step as I wanted it to be. It's just, it's very refined. It's very good. I would definitely recommend it to anyone who likes these games. Obviously, just like you were saying there with Demon's Souls, it doesn't have that same spark that the other ones quite do.
Oh, see, for me, 3 felt like a victory lap, because obviously they'd done Bloodborne, yeah, Dark Souls 1 and 2. 3 was obviously Miyazaki returning in full, having been away from the initial version of Dark Souls 2 and then patching it for the Scholar of the First Sin stuff. And so Souls 3, for me, felt like this comfort blanket, this welcome welcome back victory lap type thing that also embraced the next level of what I think makes Souls games so incredible, which is visuals, which is like genuinely awing you with certain visuals. Like the first time you see Irithyll for the first time, the capital, the first time you fight the Nameless King, even the final area where you fight, I think it's called the Nameless One or whatever that final boss is, where it's almost like a mimic of you, but you're fighting it in that twisted, collapsing space. Those are the things that I think carry straight into Elden Ring, which is obviously makes that game so gorgeous. And as much as obviously there are great vistas in Dark Souls 1, 2, and Bloodborne beforehand, and Demons, Dark Souls 3 just had that extra level of craft and care put into the visuals that I think started to elevate the whole thing. And that's alongside, like you said, the combat refinements. It plays so well. And they give you really badass armor and stuff in that game. Like, you can look like an absolute just crazy Sauron style. Like, I'm like a strength dex build, so it's like that made the most sense. It was just so Moorish. And it's not easy, but it's not that hard either. And like, it was quite a sweet spot for me where I just took it in. It was just sort of like boss battle, cool exploration, great vista, next boss, crunching a soul, like a boss soul, into getting a cool weapon, and oh my god, this thing's great, and I can actually wield it. I don't have to grind another 10 hours to hold this thing, Elden Ring. I can actually just play it. And so Dark Souls 3 for me, that's why it's number 3 for me, is just that it just comes together so well. That's actually the one that I give people to recommend.
Right.
Because I just think it's the easiest one to go, this is what a Souls game is, and you go, here you go, without all the BS that you have to get used to if you just give them Souls 1 or whatever.
That's interesting. I want to touch on a few things that you mentioned there. You know, you referred to Dark Souls 3 as kind of like a comfort blanket and a victory lap, and I would fully agree. It definitely feels like that, but I think it's telling that the games that I have at the bottom two, Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 3, are the games that most feel like a comfort blanket, and I almost don't want these games to feel
they are the safest ones
in that way. Yeah, it's like safe and it's nice, but like I need that kind of like something extra, that bit of a surprise, that bit of madness, the bit of experimentation and stuff. It's I was talking to you before we came on the podcast this morning about, you know, the experience that I had with Dark Souls 3 this time around. And when I played it for the first time back in 2016, after coming immediately from Bloodborne, I thought it was like incredibly easy, almost disappointingly easy, because I had those reflexes from Bloodborne. But going straight from Dark Souls 2 to 3 is an entirely different experience entirely, because those rhythms of combat are so different, and 3 brings in so much from Bloodborne in terms of aggression and kind of like the faster paced play, the more bigger emphasis on dodging and kind of attacks that are delayed and stuff. You know, you need to have better reflexes to play 3 than you need to play 2. You know, I think that's not a really controversial take, but it's interesting how I found it a bit more difficult this time around, being in the rhythm of Dark Souls 1 and 2 and then coming to this and kind of being like, okay, I need to unlearn some stuff. That was kind of exciting. I will disagree slightly on the visual aspect of
really?
It. Just from an entirely personal perspective, so much of the appeal of these games, for me personally, is based around the visuals and the aesthetic and the world that is built. And when I look at Dark Souls 3, actually for me, one of the biggest disappointments in comparison to some of the other games is that the visual design doesn't wow me in the same way. The ones that you mentioned absolutely do. You know, like, you're going into Anor Londo with the skybox, like, that's awesome. You're going into the place with the dragon to fight the Nameless King, awesome. The entire final area with the final boss, incredible. It's just that in the early hours especially, I'm kind of like, okay, it's a poison swamp, okay, it's the undead burg, which, not the undead burg, the undead settlement, which looks a lot like, you know, some of the areas in Bloodborne, but with
that's the day. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I like a lot of that stuff. I'm not saying any of that stuff is bad, but compared to some of the other games, it doesn't have the, holy crap, I can't believe this skybox, this vista, in the same way that I get from ones further up the list.
I know what you mean. I think that they are really high points, and I think that's the thing. For me, that's what elevates Souls 3 overall. Like, but it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't maintain that level of quality the whole way through, or that level of vista wowness the whole way through. But it was enough for me. It was little pockets of things that I thought were gorgeous. It's almost like in Souls 2, when you walk out at the start and you see Majula for the first time, that was like almost the first time they kind of really wowed you. Like, you kind of had the Night Solaire thing in Souls 1, but it just, there's something about Souls 3 that I just, like, for me, like, my whole gradient with games is just like, what were you going for and what did you achieve? And for it, like, it's not the Souls 3 is like a victory lap, it is a comfort blanket, but it felt like the culmination of like all those design lessons across the last 7 years, whereas like Demon Souls feels like this, like I said, cobbled together attempt at something that just barely holds together. I really didn't like Demons. But Souls 3, it knows what it is and it knows what it's going for and it can execute on those things.
Before we move on, I just want to make one final point, and that's referring to something that you mentioned right at the very start, because Souls 3 is maybe the only game in the entire canon so far that was also elevated by an extra video essay that I saw on it. I watched it again recently. I've seen it a few times. I think it's so good. It's It's by Jacob Geller, and it's called Dark Souls 3 is Thinking of Ending Things. And they kind of put into perspective the way that the game uses like the iconography from 1, especially, you know, it's so indebted to 1, like you said, it's a victory lap. You know, you're seeing repeated places, you're seeing repeated enemies, repeated scenarios, themes, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I like that Jacob Geller kind of like puts it into perspective and talks about it as like a meta thing of like From Software and the Dark Souls kind of like lore in general. It being like, as far as you can push this, like we can't keep doing this. Like you can't keep setting, you know, kindling the flame just to keep the age going when the age needs to die. Like you need something new. And I like that being the message of the final Dark Souls game, and it just being like, look, we need to move on to something new now.
Both
in the story and literally as developers, like this, we'll do a victory lap, we'll put a line underneath it, but we need you to know that we can't just keep doing this forever ever with the same things. We need to put this to bed and kind of see what comes next. And obviously what came next was Sekiro, was Elden Ring.
That's the thing.
I do love that. That made me appreciate it a little bit more.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, man, like Souls 3, like, yeah, it felt like one of the last times they could do that, and it's like, in its favor. But also, if we're speaking of essays, massive shout out to Noah Caldwell Gervais's five and a half hour thing. I've watched about half of that so far,
but great.
Not going to go on about that too much. But in terms of, like you said, that Dark Souls 3 being a literal ending to the trilogy, if you start diving into the lore stuff, Dark Souls 3 is where they bring back the furtive pygmy character who's mentioned at the very beginning of Dark Souls 1, and it kind of ties those things together in a more specific way than I think you are aware of the first time you go through them, because it's just the lore is just so in the background, but all those considerations are there for storytelling once you start going looking for them. But yeah, Noah Caldwell Gervais's 5 hour I played all three games and all I made was this lousy video thing.
Dude,
next level.
I literally last week when I saw that drop, it was kind of like, hey, babe, wake up, new Noah just dropped, you know what I mean? I literally said to my partner, I was like listen, I'm gonna take Wednesday night off and I'm watching it front to back. Like I'm gonna
you booked the time in.
I had to book.
Leave
it
me alone.
Please let me book this time in, 5 hours of it. I'll get some snacks and I'll get a takeaway and I'll watch this thing front to back, and it was great.
I had that on just mopping stuff up in Elden Ring, and right. it's a gorgeous time. Speaking of what isn't a gorgeous time, my number six, my second worst, is Bloodborne. Which I know is a dagger to the heart. I never click with Bloodborne. I love like the H.P. Lovecraftian visuals. I like the whole alien reveal thing towards the end, like the fact that all the I forgot what they even call them, ancient ones, like the fact that they were there all along,
yeah,
basically
the old ones. Yeah,
the old ones is a really cool thing. I like all that celestial stuff that they start doing more of, which obviously is in Elden Ring and whatever too. But Bloodborne overall never clicked with me in terms of I just didn't enjoy playing it. I'd never really click with the whole you're supposed to charge into fights thing. because for me, they didn't give you enough mechanics to tangle with like enemies in that way. Like, I never felt like I could get in the pocket of a cluster of enemies and really have fun taking them all on in a way that would let me regain health, because they have that whole more aggressive you are, the more health you get back thing. But I would just get tagged with stuff, and it was because it's still a Souls game. It's still the same Soulsian AI. Like, it's not like, I just didn't feel like they give you enough abilities. I needed maybe some sort of burn this one ability to do a crowd clearing thing, or just something. Like, I've always referred to it as Dark Souls with a dash, because I just can't get it. Like, play through that game, like I said, love the look of it. I love when they started drip feeding more of a lore as well. It was like, here's this village of bygone hunters, and everything's built on top of another city that used to be there, and like everyone's dealing with this sort of frenzied thing that's taking control of people. And for me, they started being more overt lore, and I love everything other than playing it. I don't like the color palette either, which is a very specific stupid thing potentially to focus on, but I didn't enjoy looking at that game like color-wise, color grading-wise. Like, I love the art direction, the dank cathedrals, the Eastern European stuff. But I was just like, it's just this big gray smudge that I just didn't enjoy getting. I didn't like Bloodborne at all.
That's, so, yeah. I mean, that hurts me personally.
I know.
But it's also good because, you know, like we were saying, you know, so much of this, it comes down to like, almost like granular, what do you like? Do you like the gray smudge or do you not like the gray smudge? And for me, I love the gray smudge. I totally get what you're saying. I think, you know, Bloodborne is an odd one. I think it's a lot of people's favorites, and like a lot of people's
first one.
Bounce off. Yeah, that's true. A lot of people's first one as well. For me, like, this could be my top. Like, for the longest time, this was the one I loved the most.
It's worth saying you have it at number three.
I do. I have it at number three, but I had it at number one when I sent you the preliminary list last week, I think. It's sitting at three for now.
Right.
Because everything that you just mentioned that you don't like about the game is what I love about the game. Mm. You know, it did click with me from a combat perspective. I liked it being a little bit faster. I liked having more mechanics to learn after, because it was the first one I played after Souls 1. I played them in really quick succession. For me, like, the more aggressive player, and it's definitely the visual and lore stuff that gets me in the most, you know. I was talking to a friend of mine, Jess, at the weekend, and she was talking about, you know, Bloodborne was the game that when she didn't feel like she could play it because she didn't have the skills to play it, like, she'd watch run-throughs of it, like,
right. She'd
keep watching run-throughs, and now she's finally playing it, and she's talking about how, like, victorious she felt when she, like, beat the first boss. She could finally, like, play this game that she's enjoyed for so long. But I think that aesthetic, that lore, that kind of, you know, like you say, this mix of Bram Stoker horror with Lovecraftian monstrosities towards the end, I think it just has a certain appeal to it. And if you're maybe a big bad goth like me,
how dare you accuse me of not being a big bad goth? of all the men.
You're a big metal goth, man. It's a slightly different vibe to that, I think.
I'm loving my chem. Depends what it is.
You certainly do. Yeah, like that vibe just resonates with me so much. Some people get lost in Souls games and want to drink it all in, drinking all the lore. That's the one that I've done it with in a way that
That's the thing. I totally agree with you. Like, I love all that stuff. Like, that was always the vibe. That's always what annoys me about Bloodborne, because I love the art direction. I love the, like, a lot of the boss designs, those weird inside-out wolves that you're just fighting, the blood cleric beast and all these different things. And the fact that you have that big celestial fight at the end, or you can, it's an optional one. But all those things, that stuff should make it my S in the most specific way possible. But playing it, I just thought was just horrible. I never clicked with it. And I never clicked with, like, because a lot of it is almost parry-based. Like, it is dodge-based, but a lot of it is parry-based. And I've never been a parry player. And so, like, maybe that's some of it that I just couldn't focus on. I also, when nitpicking, this is, completely personal thing, but it's on top of what I think are more valid critiques that I've already mentioned, is the fact that I hate the finishing animations in Bloodborne.
Oh!
Like, that weird, just plunge your hand into a bum and then pull what out?
How is that not the best thing in the entire world? You use your fist, you just get straight in the chest.
But it doesn't make any sense. Like, why can I punch through a man? I just don't even know what it is.
Punch through a monster.
Punch through a monster and then, like, pull something out. And I'm like, I never got what that was. It was like a bad version of, like, Metal Gear Rising's finisher, which looked really cool. He pulls out the guts and, oh, look at the guts that I've got. But in Bloodborne, he just sort of goes, punch and then pull. And that's it. And I'm like, I always hated that.
I dig that.
Just fought through this boss and now I'm doing this. And just, I've got a whole thing about, it's the most nitpicky thing as a FromSoft fan for how long now? Like 12 years, 13 years. Watching the backstab animations evolve, change, and then go back again in Elden Ring. Just do more, Miyazaki. Make more. You've never nailed the finishing stuff.
I'll tell you this. It's interesting when we get to a certain game, and this is why am I being coy, when we get to Dark Souls 2.
Yes.
Because going into Dark Souls 3, it's interesting what they change back to feel like Dark Souls 1. Mm. It's just interesting to me where they make changes, and then they think, oh no, we're going to go back to something in that is, in my eyes, maybe even a little more rudimentary. And I like that as an aesthetic choice, because I don't fully get it.
Well, okay. I think, I mean, that's the whole thing, is like, how does the franchise feel in retrospect, especially as like a trilogy of games? We should talk about Dark Souls 2 because it's your number 5. Above Dark Souls 3, Dark Souls 2 is my number 5 as well. However, I don't really rate Dark Souls 2, but it was my second Souls game in full. It was the first one I reviewed for War Culture and we started doing coverage on. So that was quite fun to get it early and get stuck in that way. But then all the changes they made, the things that they did to make it more like Demon Souls, like capping your health when you die, you know, the way that like the opening rolls out where you go to Majula, and even getting the Estus flask or knowing where to go is optional. Like, you can, I did the first time through, I missed the I think what you call the woman who gives you the Estus flask, but I missed that and I went to the wrong area. So I spent the first like 2 or 3 hours just wandering around with no way to heal, getting my health capped, just going like, is this the Souls experience? Like, coming off Dark Souls 1, going like, Dark Souls 1 is like the epitome of everything, and then hating Dark Souls 2.
Right.
That's not to say that there aren't positives for Dark Souls 2, but I think that's where you come in, because you've played through way more of it recently, and I think you came away from it a lot more surprised.
Yeah, totally. You know, Dark Souls 2 was the one that I just didn't play, because everyone was like, you know, it's the bad one. It's the one without Miyazaki, like, don't bother. I just went straight to Bloodborne.
That was just me outside your window. Just like, stop playing it, John.
Very true, but in order to finish, or at least complete it in my mind after Elden Ring, I was like, I need to play this game finally. So I went and played it, and I was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I didn't expect to enjoy it anywhere near as much as I wanted to, and it is incredibly different from Dark Souls 1, and I'm almost pleased I didn't play it after Dark Souls 1, because I would have wanted it to just be Dark Souls 1. It's a very different game.
You said,
with the health capping, with the addition of, you know, healing items, with the changes to healing, the fact that you don't just heal automatically, it's over time, combined with the world design that no longer has that kind of puzzle box thing of folding in on itself. It's
world,
more
yeah.
distinct levels that often don't even make sense. Like, you can go up like a random tower and suddenly like, there's another sky, you know, it just happens to be there. It's very video gamey.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up really appreciating all of those changes because they added something new. Like I said, it added that spark of madness that I didn't quite get from Dark Souls 3, which felt like a follow-up to Dark Souls 1, whereas this feels like its own thing. It feels like it thematically fits with the previous game.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that it's telling its own story, you know, after, like, maybe even hundreds, centuries after the first game story. And it's just kind of, it had a element to it from a visual standpoint as well that I just really enjoyed. Like you said, you know, going out to Majula, seeing, like, the Arch Dragon, maybe Arch Dragon Peak, something like with the dragons.
Oh, my God, yeah. I was going to mention that earlier because we were talking about vistas and stuff. That is my favorite visual in any Souls game, even though it is in Dark Souls 2. It is when you first see Arch Dragon Peak and you see the amount of dragons that are rendered that are all flying around above you, and you have that fight with the one dragon who's, like, kind of sleeping and then wakes up. That stuff looks great. Souls 2 is a fascinating thing to dissect. Like, it is this weird sort of, it doesn't really fit with everything else, but, like, there are pros and cons. They tried a lot of different stuff. Obviously, it isn't Miyazaki in the initial version when he came back and did Scholar of the First Sin. And the DLC is really cool too. But Souls 2 was just this weird thing for me where I got sick of how much the bosses duplicated, and it was like, oh, here's two of the same thing again. It felt like they were just a bit too exhausted turning it around. And I know that if you dive into the development of it, it was quite a tumultuous development. But if you're going to go and check out Dark Souls 2, it would be the Scholar of the First Sin one. We should move into the juiciest stuff, which are the final three games to talk about. And Sekiro. Sekiro is my number 4. Sekiro is also your number 4.
Wow.
So we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing right.
Sekiro is a fascinating thing because it is the most mainstream, quote unquote, of the ones that they put out. And it's telling that it was published by Activision. Now, I don't think that Activision had much say in the creative side of it, but I do love that they, like you said, with Souls 3, it was like that formula was done. We need to do something else. And then Sekiro is like, again, it's all quote unquote, but is the most straightforward one of these, where it's like, here's your character, here's a very specific build that you have. You can unlock abilities, but you have one weapon that you need to master, a whole new combat system that is entirely prevalent on parrying and defense, turning things around in specific timing windows, and cutscenes where characters talk to each other, and, like, you know, here's a flashback sequence, and here's why you're fighting. And I love all that stuff. Like, I'm an absolute simp for Japanese stuff anyway, so, like, I love all those things. I love all the Japanese demons and mythology side of it. Sekiro was just the only mark against Sekiro was a complete personal thing, was how long it took me to beat Genichiro, because that fight was just brutal, and it took me just days of just being like, oh my god, just die. But as a full package, I think Sekiro is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it might have, like, the best combat out of any
of
them.
Maybe
I do,
but it's also the most simple combat.
It's definitely like the one that you can't have a build in it, for instance. You know,
you have to
play it like it wants you to play it, which I guess I totally understand why that turns a lot of people off. But for me, getting into the rhythm of Sekiro was, like, unlike anything else combat wise in the entire entire franchise, whether we're talking about Bloodborne, Elden Ring, what have you.
Every single enemy kill is like the energy they put into the finishing animations. Everything has a thoom hit, and you're just wrecking guys in Sekiro. Like, yeah.
I think because of that, though, funnily enough, it's probably the second most difficult one that I played, at least at the time, because you have to unlearn everything that you learned from Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, all of those mechanics. You kind of have to unlearn it and play it differently.
Yeah.
So if you're going straight from them and you're trying to play it similarly to Souls, like, you're going to get your ass kicked. It took me a while to understand that, but I appreciated that so much, like the fact that they were doing something different.
I love their like rock, paper, scissors approach, because that was the thing. For the longest time, and so, I mean, that's the thing, we're so far past this now in terms of how much time has passed, but like turtle poking and circling around enemies and just getting behind something and poking it until it dies was the Souls tactic. And I love that they acknowledged that and went, okay, we're going to make a game where you can't do that. Every enemy has an animation. They'll whip around and catch you if you try and go around them. You need to face them head on, and every attack has a counterattack. Everything has a rock, paper, scissors style triumvirate as a word. Ooh, the other day. Like three things connected. Love it. And why Trivium? I call Trivium. But also, the nice little triumvirate of that rock, paper, scissors approach to combat, where you can block everything, parry everything, use this attack, whatever. That dance with enemies when you start chaining it together, like that, it flows. Yeah. Like the animations are so slick and across all of Sekiro.
Yeah, 100%. It's kind of like why I like Sifu as well. You know, it kind of has that kind of head
on. The game of the year, Josh Brown.
Not with Elden Ring around, my friend. I fully agree with everything you just said. The only way it's not higher for me and it doesn't break into that top three masterpiece tier is just because I think some of the bosses are a little underwhelming. Like, I can't remember too many of them right now. Like you said, the story is more straightforward, but that's also kind of made it more forgettable for me. Like, I think we've talked about this before, but I can't remember almost anything from Sekiro's story.
Well, it's quite a basic story, really.
Accessible. Yeah, very true. And finally, the only reason it doesn't get into the top tier is because I had the same issue that you had with Elden Ring, where I thought it was wrapping up Sekiro.
Right.
And then when it wasn't, I was kind of like, is this poorly paced? Is this a me thing? I didn't really know. But the final 5 hours or so, still really good, still high quality, but I thought they got the pacing a little bit wrong.
Right, okay.
I thought it was ending when it wasn't.
The only thing that I agree with you on there is that I missed the Demon of Hatred first time. And then afterwards, I was just like, I used that cheese method that they patched out and just watched it fall to its own stupid death. Because I was like, I'm not fighting you after I've done Genichiro.
But was so difficult.
Yeah, that thing was an absolute mess. Top two, I'm going to stick with my original ranking so that we don't agree, because then it's more interesting. Top two, you have number two, Elden Ring. Number one, Dark Souls. I have number two, Dark Souls. Number one, Elden Ring. Let's talk about your number one, which is Dark Souls.
Yes.
Which was my first Dark Souls. I get the Soulsian tilt.
Yeah.
But I'll get to why I think Elden Ring is better overall. Why is Dark Souls your number one?
It's full Soulsian tilt, baby. It's full that. If you had someone come up to me and say, which game should I play? I'd say play both of them, please.
Yep.
But I would probably recommend Elden Ring as kind of maybe more accessible, maybe more of a crowd pleaser. But Dark Souls 1 is kind of one of those life-changing experiences. A little bit like Elden Ring, but that was the first time, you know, I'd ever played one of these. Mm-hmm. And the way it operated, you know, with that level design that kind of interconnects with each other. Like, I don't think I've had wow moments in this franchise like I have had with that first game, just by the way that the levels were designed, in that sense of awe, that sense of things are getting bigger, like the scale of this is constantly expanding and you feel kind of like you're part of this whole world. It's absolutely in the level design. Like, I think the bosses are great. I think the visual design is awesome. The combat still holds up. I like the slower pace.
That's why so
I like
chunky.
Dark Souls 2, because that retains like the slower, more methodical approach to combat. But yeah, it's 100% in the level design. Like, you know, every area in that game, even some of like the later ones, which are clearly unfinished, you know, like Izalith. And that's the only reason why I would kind of maybe put Elden Ring above it, or maybe say it's more recommendable, because, you know, it's Dark Souls, even though Demon's Souls came before, it's very much an experimental stab at this style. And they don't get everything right, I don't think, especially in the later half, but they get so much right. And the highs are so bloody high.
The thing is, it's worth saying that we are splitting hairs.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and Dark Souls 1 was my original number one. I just think that if I'm factoring in, like I said, how much something goes for and how much they achieve, and it's not to get all lost in subjectivity, objectivity. There are some things in Elden Ring, and it is bolstered by the lore. That's why I mentioned that at the beginning. It is bolstered by Vati Vidya's video, because Elden Ring's overall world is just so well realized.
Yeah.
And I think that the world that they create, and the fact that it doesn't entwine with Dark Souls, and they take that feeling that you just described of everything connecting to everything else, and then spread it out across this humongous world, like this multi-layered place that has a whole secret, like, star-based, like, underworld underneath the map, and the way that they lay everything out, where you can't can't go wrong. Everything feeds back into everything else. And the world is just so rich. Like, whether you're getting lost with side quests, you're doing Rani stuff, you're doing Corbin stuff or Corhin stuff, or you're just getting lost ranking stuff up. Like, it is in the end game where I've kind of just gone like, oh, I love the design of this whole thing. Like, yeah. I was always looking for that clarity I would get when I hit credits, because then I can kind of take a step back. For me, I'm always on like a certain treadmill or a certain focused path to just sort of get like a through line of a game and then step back and go, okay, like, let me take this in. And that was my whole thing with Elden Ring, where I was like, nah, this is unbelievably impressive. And I feel like they took that original Soulsian energy, that vibe of like being you against the world, but it is now a world. And like, you know, they have like various mini Souls games dotted around that map.
Yeah.
It's almost like three or four Souls games combined kind of thing. And I just love the path they put you on. And as much as I think that the damage scaling is a bit naff, some of the final bosses don't, they start one-shotting you in a way that the early ones weren't, to the point where the game's just telling you, go explore. If you do go explore, you're always rewarded. And I think that the level of lore that's in there is the kind of thing that is finally as rich as the world itself. Which is something that I can't say, and I could be completely wrong, about the older Souls games. They didn't make me think in the way that I love the character drama of Elden Ring.
Right.
Okay. And like looking at the family, there's a family tree you can look up and get used to who's who and who betrayed who and who killed who. And I just love all that stuff. And bits and pieces of that were in the old ones, but that's what elevates it for me. So I think some of it might be recency bias, but I think if I really get brass tacks about it, Elden Ring is just this mammoth thing,
yeah,
that I just think for now at least is above Dark Souls.
Well, this is it, man. I think they're both 10 out of 10 genuine like masterpieces, and it is splitting hairs at a certain point.
Yeah.
For me, it's just, it is completely subjective. It's how much Dark Souls like changed my life when I was a little bit younger. You know, playing that for the first time was revelatory. I hadn't played anything like it. I still have such fond memories of every area in that game I know so well, because I spent so much time in it, you know, struggling through most of it, having to learn this entire thing. But yeah, I'd fully echo everything that you just said about Elden.
Funnily enough, I will say, and it's like, it might sound cheesy or whatever, but there's something about, and it was Dark Souls 1, there was something about overcoming that level of adversity, like genuinely just being pummeled into the ground by a digital creation, a computer game, something you have to interact with and train your brain and steel yourself and not get carried, not get too annoyed, and like literally like overcome a lot of your own predilections and emotions. There is something about beating one of these games, and I had this feeling with Dark Souls 1 where I felt like I could then go out and do other things in life.
Right.
Because I was just like, but I, like, whatever it was like, well, if I've got through this, I can get through that. And like, I've always carried that with me. I know it's just a game, but to me it's more than that. And it was that thing where I was just like, because nothing's going to be as hard as beating Ornstein and Smough melee only with no summons. I don't care, like, it doesn't matter what it is. And I've always carried that with me, and I think that's the thing that Miyazaki always wanted to imbue in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is why something like Dark Souls is so much bigger. So yeah, might just flip it, to be honest. Dark Souls 1 number 1. I don't know, they're both as valid as each other. To run them down, JB's top 7 was from 7 to 1 Demon's Souls, Dark Souls 3, Dark Souls 2, Sekiro, Bloodborne, Elden Ring, and Dark Souls. And mine, 7-1, was Demon's Souls, Bloodborne, Dark Souls 2, Sekiro, Dark Souls 3, Dark Souls 1, and Elden Ring at number 1, at least for now. Let me think some more and we'll see. For now, this has been the wind-up, though. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. Come find us on social media. Let us know your favorite Souls games, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.